for nearly two decades. The award-winning Your Financial Editor program on 930 WFMD. News from the worlds of business and finance with Your Financial Editor, Chris Murray.
Welcome to another edition of the Your Financial Editor program right here on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD and at WFMD.com or on your smartphone or tablet. You get that free WFMD app. Just download that from the iTunes store or from the Android store, and you can have the program whenever and wherever you want. I am Chris Murray, your host. So glad to have you along. Hope your Saturday is going well. Good program laid out for you today. We're going to be talking about some of the top stories of this week, some economic data, including that jobs report yesterday. And also, we're going to be talking about the importance of a retirement planning portfolio, how to properly do it, along with some other things. We've got the brand new text line where you can text in and get some complimentary information that you can use in your planning or just to increase your knowledge. So I'll have that for you today. So stay tuned. We're looking forward to a good program. A couple things we saw this week that haven't been talked about lately a whole lot, and that's deals. We saw that the Blackstone Group has struck a deal to buy a portfolio of U.S. industrial warehouses from a company called Colonial Capital. This is a $5.9 billion deal, and it just goes to show that Blackstone is really all in on what they believe is going to be continued growth of e-commerce. So the deal is Blackstone's second major purchase of a warehouse network this year. I spoke back in June about the company's real estate business and how they had signed a deal to buy the U.S. warehouses of a company called GLP for $18.7 billion. So like I said, the bet that they have in this space is massive. And for Colony, the sale marks a major step toward pivoting its strategy to investing in digital real estate and infrastructure such as data centers, cell towers, fiber optic networks, and away from the traditional real estate holdings. So this deal includes about 60 million square feet across 465 warehouses in 26 markets, but in particular, very strategically placed. You've got a big concentration in areas like northern New Jersey, Florida, Atlanta, Dallas, California. So again, they're really looking to increase the size of their footprint in this area as far as Blackstone goes. And then also we saw this week another large deal. FanDuel owner, it's a company called Flutter Entertainment. They agreed to buy a company called Stars Group for about $6 billion. That's going to create an online gambling giant as internet and app-based betting just continues to grow at a pretty rapid pace, especially here in the United States. So Flutter is actually based in Dublin, Ireland. And they own bookie brands in the United Kingdom, including Paddy Power, Betfair, and they operate these walk-in betting parlors in different shopping districts of many of Britain's cities and towns. And I'll tell you, they offer bets on everything. I mean, you can obviously bet on the traditional stuff like a horse race or a boxing match, but they also will let you place a bet on the outcome of our elections here in the U.S. or the fate of their prime minister over there. So, you know, just last year, there was a Supreme Court decision, and it opened up the U.S.'s sports betting market. So individual states still or typically have regulatory responsibility for gambling oversight, but it did open things up a little bit, and I think it's just going to become even more popular and continue to grow. So I know a lot of people disagree with gambling, but there's also a lot of folks, I guess, out there that want to do it, even if it's, you know, could be to their detriment. But you see these kind of large deals. And again, with the internet and the app-based betting options. I can't see it going anywhere but up. So that's something that we'll continue to keep an eye on as well. That text line I mentioned to you a couple minutes ago at the opening of the program, it's the new text line 301-683-5360, 5360. There are a lot of people that are getting close to retirement, and they're not sure how Social Security is going to play into their retirement planning and their retirement well-being. So we've got a free report for you on that. So if you, again, to the text line, 301-683-5360, just type the word security. You'll get your free Social Security download and have it right there on your phone for yourself. It was really interesting to see this week that the U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned a Russian financier. The guy's name is Yevgeny Prigozhin. This happened on Monday for his connection to the Internet Research Agency that tried to interfere in the U.S.'s 2018 midterm elections. So the statement from the Treasury Department, from the Secretary Mnuchin himself, was Treasury is targeting the private planes, the yachts, and associated front companies of Prigozhin, the Russian behind the Internet Research Agency and its attempts to subvert American democratic processes. So that was a statement from the Treasury Secretary. He went on to say, free and fair elections are the cornerstone of American democracy, and we will use our authorities against anyone seeking to undermine our processes and subversively influence voters. So this guy is obviously a multi-millionaire, if not a billionaire, and he's got, you know, his jets and yachts and all kinds of fancy stuff, helicopters. So because he's targeted now, or identified, I should say, as a bad actor, they're going to go after him financially along with any other pressure that they can put on him. So I thought that was pretty bold coming from the Treasury Secretary himself, not just a generic statement from the Treasury Department or from one of his underlings. So it caught my attention. I wanted to share it with you. And then it's, I tell you, they're back at it again. It's the president and the chairman of the Federal Reserve. So, you know, you had the president on Tuesday renew his criticism of the Federal Reserve and its chairman, Jerome Powell, calling the central bank and its leaders their own worst enemies. So this is how this played out on Tuesday. The president sent out a tweet saying, as I predicted, Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve have allowed the dollar to get so strong, especially relative to all other currencies, that our manufacturers are being negatively affected. He said, Fed rate too high. They are their own worst enemies, and they don't have a clue. Pathetic, with a exclamation point. So, you know, this has been going on, and it's not the first time that the president has criticized the value of the U.S. dollar. Back in late August, the president tweeted that the euro was dropping against the dollar like crazy and giving them a big export and manufacturing advantage, and that the Fed was doing nothing about it. So he was saying at that time our dollar was, you know, the strongest in history. And, you know, he's just talking about the negative impact on, again, the folks here in the United States. So this just continues, and we'll have to wait and see what happens at the next Federal Reserve meeting. It's not far away. And, you know, the market is kind of torn in a way between will we get a cut at October and December, or will we get a cut at just one of the two? So only time will tell. And we'll keep an eye on that for you. This is something also I made a note to share with you that I thought was really, or potentially could be really positive. The International Monetary Fund, who, of course, you as an American taxpayer are the biggest contributor to the IMF of any of the other countries in the world. But they got a new leader this week. So her name is Kristalina Georgieva. And she took the helm of the IMF this week. Her homeland is Bulgaria. And back in the 1990s, she was living through the pain that Bulgaria was experiencing from socialism. So they were going from socialism to a free market economy back in the 1990s. Their financial system was on the brink of collapsing. They had crazy inflation. They had a ton of debt. They had a super high unemployment situation. And she said that it was the experience of seeing people faced with food shortages and widespread poverty that was caused by these bad policies of socialism that really made her commit to open markets and just rigorous economic development. So she said that the IMF helped Bulgaria's economy back then by providing essential loans in exchange for difficult policy reforms. And what did they include? Those reforms including shrinking the public sector, privatizing some of the state-owned enterprises, doing away with a lot of the state subsidies, all of the damage and the ill that comes from socialism. You know, they were trying to get away from, and it really impacted her, apparently. And I just hope it's true, because she is sitting there looking at all these loan requests from all of these countries that are in trouble. So whether you're talking about, you know, a Venezuela or a Zimbabwe or an Argentina, or, you know, for so much time we spoke about Greece some years back, for them to offer the loans they need to kind of right the ship, they have to make tough decisions, and they have to do what's right, because, again, it's your money. A large part of it is your tax money that's going to these other countries. So you don't want it to be lost to corruption or rerouted somehow so that it gets into the wrong hands or it's abused or used for just the opposite of what we want it to be used for and what it's expected and supposed to be used for. So I'm keeping my hopes up. That and only time will tell if Kristalina is going to do the type of job that she kind of hinted at, and that she really has, since living through the mess of Bulgaria as a socialist country and communist country, that she'll be able to, you know, make good decisions and make good demands as to what needs to be done before you get any kind of a loan to make the country better. Quick break. Before I do that, I'll give you that text line. The new text line is 301-683-5360. A lot of talk about market downturn, market corrections. We're in the longest expansion in the United States as far as an economic expansion, over 10 years now. So I mean, that's obviously, you see an expansion that's been going on for a long time, maybe getting a little long in the tooth. Eventually, there will be a recession, some type of market correction or bear market, whatever it may be. Free report for you on the text line, 301-683-5360. When you just type in the word questions to 301-683-5360, you'll get a free report on market corrections and, you know, how to best prepare and handle those. Back in a minute.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD, and of course at WFMD.com and on your 930 WFMD app. That's a free download for you. So you can download that to your smartphone or tablet so you have it. So let's look at some economic data of this week. In particular, one thing that I saw that I wanted to share with you, retailers are expecting a strong Christmas shopping season. But they also warn that the global political and economic uncertainty could erode consumer confidence, and obviously that could impact spending. So they were a little guarded. But the National Retail Federation did say that they said it on Thursday, I believe it was. And this is the group that, you know, is representing the big names, the Walmarts, the Macy's, the Amazon.coms, et cetera, that they expect sales to rise in the range of 3.8 to 4.2%. And that means, if that happens, that about $730 billion will be kind of, you know, taken out of wallets and pocketbooks and credit card swipes. So that would be fantastic. Now, that was the expectation last year, and it didn't happen. Now, some of that may have been because of the government shutdown, so we'll wait and see how this year plays out. But again, the optimism is there. Retailers and consumers are feeling confident because of the low unemployment, the rising wages, the economy is still growing, even though it's not growing quite as fast as it has been the last few years, it's still growing. And they just said, look, you know, we are worried about the, you know, the trade, the issues, interest rates, global risk factors, political stuff, which you always have to be, you know, aware of that because it's always going to be going on. So the National Retail Federation, the figures, they cover sales online and in stores from November 1st to December 31st. So obviously some people start earlier, but in any event, that's the, like I said, they're optimistic. They're looking forward to a good Christmas shopping season. We saw some car sales, vehicle sales, I should say, that were released this week. They were kind of all over the place. General Motors, their U.S. auto sales climbed 6.3% in the third quarter. Once again, it's the pickup trucks, it's the SUVs that there's strong demand for, and that was really helping General Motors. Fiat Chrysler, their sales for the same period were flat, and Ford actually had a 5.1% decline for the third quarter. And then when you look at some of the Japanese car companies, Toyota sales dropped 2.5%. Honda Motor, their sales were off less than 1%. Nissan's were, they dropped 7.1% in the first 9 months compared with the same period a year ago. So overall, when you throw them all into the mixing bowl, U.S. auto industry sales were down 1.4% January through September. So it's not surprising. You know, if you look at this, the last 4 years, I think it's four, they've been record years, one after the other, over 17 million vehicles sold. And like I said, it was one record year after another. So if we don't see 17 million sold, obviously it's not going to be a record and it is going to drop a little bit. But overall, things seem to be pretty healthy. And of course, there's a lot of new models coming out right now. So we'll see how strong everything is for the fourth quarter and how the year ends up at the end of December, you know, what the quarter looks like in the year overall. Now, we also saw this week that U.S. factory activity contracted for the second straight month. So we saw that at the beginning of the week. The Institute for Supply Management, the ISM report, came out on Tuesday, and it showed that manufacturing went from a reading of 49.1 in August down to 47.8 in September. Anything below 50 is contraction, and we don't want to see that. So that was not well received. It was the start of a Tuesday and Wednesday in particular that were extremely ugly as far as trading in the financial markets. You see the same thing across the pond over in Europe with some real poor numbers as far as manufacturing goes. And then, of course, in Asia, especially in China, they're feeling some serious pain. You know, they've got their arm twisted behind their back right now with much more than we do in this trade dispute. So it wasn't good to see that ISM report. Having said that, there are other reports out that show that it really wasn't that bad. There's another company called IHS Market, and their number was above 50. So we'll keep an eye on it. Same thing for the ISM services report. It was down, not below 50, but it dropped as well. So we'll keep an eye on these key reports, especially the service report, because that accounts for over two-thirds of what our economy is based on. And then as we slide into the jobs numbers, the ADP report, came out on Thursday. And it was a solid number. And then, of course, yesterday, the big number from the Labor Department, employers added a nice steady pace of new jobs last month. Unemployment hit a 50-year low. So, you know, 136,000 jobs were added in September. The jobless rate dropped from 3.7 to 3.5. That's the lowest we've seen since December of 1969. And also, the average hourly earnings climbed 2.9% from September 18 to September 19. And it just looks like if you want to work, you can. I mean, there's more jobs available than people to fill them. So, again, I mean, I think if people want to work, there's something out there for them for sure. So that was pretty solid. Going to get some news for you. Want to throw out the text line, 301-683-5360. That's 301-683-5360. A lot of people are going into retirement, close to it or already are. So there's a checklist that we have for you, the retirement income checklist. And if you text the word checklist to 301-683-5360, you'll get yourself a free report. So help yourself to that.
It's your financial editor with Chris Murray on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD and at WFMD.com. And of course, at 930 WFMD, that's a free download from iTunes and also the Android store. And that way you have the program or the station, I should say, whenever you need it or want it, whether it's traffic, news, business, Morning News Express, all the syndicated talent that's here on the program, all the local talent. Sports, you name it. It's all right at your fingertips. If you're out and about, you can just use your phone and listen. So before I get to one of the main things I wanted to talk about this morning, which is why retirement portfolio design should be flexible, I wanted to talk on and about small business growth and the economic benefits of that. Sometimes I think it's really glossed over. So I mean, the bottom line is a promising way to jumpstart the U.S. economy is by helping more entrepreneurs establish their own businesses. So the 30.2 million U.S. small businesses represent a ton of all businesses here in the country. They employ nearly half, 47.5% of the American total workforce. Unbelievable. So when I was saying that, helping more entrepreneurs establish their own business, one of the main ways that that can be done is with less regulation, which is actually what we're seeing. I just saw this week, and I forget the gentleman's name that was nominated to basically be the top guy in regulation. And what has been going on with the administration, so many more regulations have been rolled back than added that it's making it easier for people to start and run businesses and for these entrepreneurs to actually flourish and add value to not just to their community and region, but also to the U.S. economy. And if you need further proof that small businesses can provide an economic boost, just consider that in July 2019 alone, small business loan applications grew to a post-recession record of more than 27% at the big banks. Then the big banks are the ones that have $10 billion plus in assets, and more than 50% growth at small banks. So as small businesses grow, they use borrowed capital to hire more workers, expand to new locations, they increase inventory, etc. So that's kind of the proof in the pudding right there. Now, it's also important, just in case you're thinking about doing this yourself and starting your own business, whether you're starting or expanding, actually, business takes know-how. You have to have the capital and a strategic understanding of your market, because small business entrepreneurship, it can be risky. And it helps to first get your financial ducks in a row to help ensure that any business declines or problems or, you know, roadblocks that you hit, that they don't affect your personal finances and really end up wrecking things beyond repair. So using strategic tactics can help keep capital flowing. And some of those options you could include, say, outsourcing accounts receivable collections to a third party in order to maybe get paid sooner. You could apply for something that's known as a micro loan from the U.S. Small Business Administration, one of their partner financial institutions, to help cover some overhead or cost. Also, keeping technology expenses low by shopping for free or low-cost software options that you can still scale your business with and grow and will take care of your business needs. But again, maybe, you know, keeping your costs down a little bit, or at least as much as you can. Another way to help reduce cost while supporting local economies is by starting or relocating businesses to a kind of a post-industrial type area. So many of those types of areas have seen declines because factories and plants have closed throughout the past couple decades. You may have drove through, you know, some of those areas and you're familiar with them, or you know what I mean. And not only can business owners find cheaper property and often some good labor sources, but the business may prove to be an important boost for the local economy. So you start seeing all of the positive benefits. Again, cheaper property for the business owner and lower operating expenses. And then if you do have the folks around there that were kind of left behind, if you will, after the financial crisis or as manufacturing deteriorated here in the country, maybe you have the type of labor that you would need. And it's just the local economy, they're going to, if they're smart, they're going to love you for it, because you're adding value to their area, to their home. So the other thing it does, you know, and the importance of the small business is the networking options. So for those who are consultants or own a small business, the career networking site, I know one that's really popular right now, LinkedIn, can really help simplify some of your marketing. So I saw the website recently announced a new feature for freelancers and small business owners to kind of showcase their services on their LinkedIn profile. And that way, if you have somebody on LinkedIn that's being really specific about what they're looking for, the type of service, for example, they can use these keywords. And if it's linked to your description, then you can, you know, you can benefit from that and pop up on their radar. So I think there's just so many positive things that, that you see from these entrepreneurs and these small business owners, and just the great contributions that they make. And then they end up doing well themselves financially, so they improve their lives and their families' lives. And then, of course, if they're charitably inclined, they're providing monies to charities and donating to things they love and really care about. And then, of course, like I said, if you're providing jobs for people, especially if you're providing a good job and a safe work area, and the money that comes along with it and benefits or however it may be structured, it's just a really, really positive thing. So, again, I just wanted to make sure that I got that out there, the importance of small business and that people are behind it. And this really goes for medium and large business, too. They just don't need as much help or as much support. They kind of already have their strategies in place and people in place to do some of that outside work. So if you're a small business owner, you're usually juggling five or six things at a time. But it's a wonderful benefit. So one, I just want to thank all the small business owners out there and their management teams and everybody that does a good job and adds value to the local communities. I just think it's such a positive thing, and it's so important. When we come back, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll talk about that, what I mentioned earlier, why retirement portfolio design should be flexible, and just the overall importance of it, if you will. And then before the last break, I was talking about the retirement income checklist. And if you go to our new text line, that's 301-683-5360. If you just type in the word checklist, then you'll get it for free. I think you'll enjoy it. Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD at WFMD.com and on the 930 WFMD app. Hope your Saturday's going well, your weekend's off to a good start. And, earlier I was thinking about this during the break, just how good the jobs report is, that situation, I should say. And, the report yesterday was good, but the situation overall, 50-year low for the unemployment rate. As always, you look, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman or what color your skin is or, what level of education you really come from. Things are good. Now, how long they stay that way? I mentioned also earlier about we're in the longest economic expansion in American history. So, people worry about things getting a little long in the tooth as far as the economy goes and the financial markets, et cetera. And one of the things I also mentioned earlier is people are concerned about their investments, which I'm getting ready to talk to. But again, back to the new tax-free line, if you want to understand market corrections, because sooner or later we're going to have one, or another one, I should say, then the text line is 301-683-5360. Just type the word questions. Questions to 301-683-5360, and you'll get Understanding Market Corrections, that report. Questions to 301-683-5360. So why is a retirement portfolio design important? And also, why should it be flexible? Well, there's one predominant reason why retirement portfolio design must be approached differently today than in previous years. There's an infant alive in this world right now who is expected to reach age 200. That's according to some pretty smart people at a pretty reputable Ivy League institution. And basically, that's the prediction from demographers researching life expectancy trends, according to Olivia Mitchell, who's a business economics and public policy professor who teaches at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and is the executive director of the school's Pension Research Council. So this isn't just, you know, some poll from something like a money magazine or whatever. This is some hard research. It's been done by the Wharton School at the University of Penn. And it just, when I saw it, I couldn't believe that we're talking about age 200. So one of the main tenets of retirement income planning is to recognize that a portfolio really becomes a living, breathing entity. It will independently change throughout time, and that's just going to be because of market forces and the impact that they have on the retirement income planning. But you will need to step in every now and then to make some structural changes. For example, as you get older, based on your risk tolerance and what you can really stomach, not what you think you can stomach, you may want to minimize your stock exposure and consider something that's more conservative, more income producing. You know, you want to make sure that you maintain a mix of investments and of insurance and of bank products. And if it sounds too complicated, some of the things I'm saying, you could do what some of the pros recommend and stick to a specific portfolio formula. For example, a name that people know, you could consider Warren Buffett's 90-10 portfolio, 90% equities, 10% fixed income or bonds, if you will. Or you could go with the standard investment allocation that's used by, again, like a Ivy League college endowment fund. There are also individual mutual funds that are designed to make it even easier, such as those target date mutual funds, which automatically make changes for you based on your retirement date, or, you know, what you're assuming is going to be your retirement date. Now, look, you have to use caution there, though. I want to say that, too, because some of these retirement date funds, as I mentioned earlier in the year here on the program, were caught speculating and actually being more risky than what the person that put their money in thought they were being. So, and they were big names that were caught doing that. This isn't just, you know, some fly-by-night mutual fund company. So you do have to be careful with that. But, you know, very likely the best plan is to work with an experienced financial advisor who understands the market and the economic data and the Federal Reserve, and most importantly, understands what your goals are and wants to keep your keep you really on track to have the retirement that you're planning for. So you look at this like someone planning to receive retirement income for 30 years or longer should probably explore opportunities among those income-producing investments that I mentioned. They generally have lower risk, and you know, one option also is allocating a portion of assets to high quality dividend growth stocks. So that class of investments, it tends to have a long track record for increasing dividends each year. I mean, that could change, like we saw during the last financial crisis when dividends were cut back. Some of them were even eliminated. But for the most part, when you're not in that type of situation, you know, you can get some nice dividend growth and income out of that. So it's important, though, for investors to understand that, again, dividends are paid at the discretion of the board of directors, and they're not guaranteed. So, you know, you have to understand that there can be some flexibility, both good and bad there. And it's also important for a retirement portfolio to have an allocation dedicated to liquid or highly accessible funds. You want to make sure that you don't have everything tied up so that if you need something because of an emergency or an opportunity and the market happens to be lower, that you would have to sell at a loss. You know, you kind of you want to put it in tiers, if you will, so that you have liquid and then, you know, you have some that's for short term and then, of course, your long term exposure as well. And they that goes all over the place. I mean, I talked about, you know, individual stocks and mutual funds, but you look at money markets, you look at short term bonds, you look at some CDs, whatever it might be, to make the plan just right for you. So there are currently three types of financial vehicles that can provide income for life when you're looking at, okay, what's going to keep pace with me and be around for as long as I am, no matter how long you live, basically. The first one is Social Security. But again, those benefits are designed to supplement income, not be the only source. The second is a company-sponsored pension plan, but those are far less common today, and they're not expected to, you know, be as robust as they used to be and not as available going into the future. You'll see probably more of a pullback from that. The third option is an annuity, which is gaining a lot of traction because of its availability to most people now. In fact, the most recent recommendation by many researchers is to include a deferred lifetime income annuity as a default option in the 401k plan that you have. So they're trying to make that more available so there'll be some other type of guaranteed income stream that would be available to the average, you know, rank and file employee, for example, who has a low tolerance for risk and just wants to make sure that they have a retirement income, like I said, that lasts as long as they do. So that's why it's so important to make sure that you do create your retirement portfolio properly and also make sure that it is flexible because, as we know, you know, that's something that's just the way the world works. There's always something going on, and you want to make sure that when you build something this important and you maintain it, that it's exactly like it should be or as close to it as possible for you. So just wanted to share those things with you. Back to the new text line we have here on the program, 301-683-5360. The Income Bridge is a report that's free for you now, too. So again, when you leave your job for the last time, well, that paycheck's not going to be coming in anymore. So you look at, okay, I'm going to have Social Security maybe if I'm not too young, and I might have a pension, I might not. And how am I going to create the income to replace that paycheck I was getting? So the Income Bridge is the name of the report. And if you type the word income to 301-683-5360, that'll come directly to your phone. And you'll have it right there, and you can take a look at it. So the text line is 301-683-5360. And the word for this particular complimentary report is income. And it'll be right there for you. That does it for me. Out of time for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the program. I enjoyed putting it on for you. And I'll be speaking with Bob Miller on the Morning News Express next week, Monday through Friday, three times live. Bob and I chat 5:50, 6:50, 7:50 a.m. And we'll let you know what's going on. And then we'll be back here next Saturday for you as well with some new stuff. I had some conversation this past week with a real interesting guy. And I'm not going to say that he's going to be here for sure, but he wants to be. So it's going to be an interesting topic, and I think you'll enjoy it. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. And this is Chris Murray wishing you and your family financial success.
He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like old Bandit Run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and truckin'.